From the land of Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 25th day of August 2011. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. TGM's Matt Bennett will be here to look at the cash grain market, and we'll hear not from Pete Labatt today, but Mike Tenora of T-Storm Weather in Chicago about the agricultural weather forecast. Along the way, we should get a phone call from Chip Flory, as long as he can get to us from his field in either Iowa or Minnesota, to update the final day of the western leg of the Pro Farmer Crop Tour. And it all happens right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
In Chicago, on this Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day mostly higher. The September soft read at 7.57 1/4, up 8 cents. December at 7.87 3/4, 10.5 higher. And July wheat at $8.28 1/4 in Chicago, up 7 1/4. The hard red finished the July in Kansas City at $8.78, 12 cents higher. September corn futures back in Chicago, $7.32 1/4, 0.5 cent higher. December CME group at 7.43 1/2, up 0.5. The March at 7.55, 1 higher. May futures at 7.58 3/4, up 1.5. And July, $7.60 1/2, up 1 3/4 for the day. December corn of next year, $6.55, 1/4 higher. September soybeans, $13.86, down 0.5. November at $13.92 3/4, 3/4 cent lower. January at $14.03 1/4, down 0.5. And the March contract at $14.06, up 1/4 for the day. May corn, or rather beans, at $14.04 1/4, up 1, and July at $14.06 1/2, up 1.5 cents. November bean futures at $13.39 3/4, up 5 3/4. Bean meal finished at $3.68, that's a dollar higher. Bean oil at $55.60, down 18 cents. Live cattle futures finished the nearby contract from the Mercantile Exchange and the October at $114.10, 17.5 higher. December there at $116.45, up 30 on the afternoon. August feeders at $133.67 1/2, up 17.5. September at $131.62 1/2, 7.5 cents higher. In October at $132.20, 17.5 cents higher. October lean hogs $87.22 1/2, up 17.5 cents. December futures $84.45 per 100 pounds, up a dollar on the day. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Nearby crude oil at $85.16 a barrel, unchanged. Ethanol at $2.89 4/10, 1 penny and 3/10 of a cent lower. Natural gas at $3.93 6/10, up 1 4/10 of a cent. Heating oil or diesel fuel 2 4/10 higher at $2.98 1/2. And gold futures on the day up $5.70 at $1,759.89 an ounce. The Dow Jones Industrial Average now at 11,171, down 149 points. The dollar at 74.28 is up 0.27 on the afternoon. The weather forecast for the Urbana-Champaign area, as it comes from the National Weather Service for the afternoon, says we'll see sunny skies today, a high near 83 degrees. North winds at about 10 miles an hour. Should be a beautiful afternoon. Tonight, mostly clear, a low of 58 degrees. Northeast winds at about 6 miles an hour. Tomorrow, on Friday, sunny skies, a high near 83. Again, northeast winds at 3 to 5. Friday night, mostly clear, a low of 61. And Saturday, mostly sunny skies, a high near 85 degrees. Winds be calm Saturday between 6 and 9 out of the north. Saturday night, mostly clear, low 59. On Sunday, sunny skies, a high near 80 degrees. Sunday night, partly cloudy, a low of 60. Monday, partly sunny, a high of 82 as we set up for Farm Progress Show in Decatur. Monday night, partly cloudy and a low of 60. And then that first day of the show should show us mostly sunny skies and 82. Tuesday night, partly cloudy and 61. On the middle day of the Farm Progress Show, mostly sunny, a high near 85 degrees. A more complete look at the weather forecast as we move towards the close of our program. We'll talk with not Pete Labatt, he's busy with the East Coast and Irene, but we'll talk with Mike Tenora. He's with T-Storm Weather out of Chicago.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
On this Thursday afternoon, Mike Zuzolo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana, joins us to take up the commodity markets. Thanks, Mike, for being with us today.
Todd, thanks for letting me do Thursday. I'm going to miss you and Dave and everybody that we see at the Farm Progress Show. I'll be across the ocean taking about a 16-hour flight tomorrow to a grain conference in South Africa, but sounds like it's going to be worth it, but I will miss that Farm Progress Show. It's always great in Decatur.
Now, I hate to do business on the phone, but you and I do need to set up a Skype time. So we'll do that via email. You'll have contact next week?
Yes, I got that all set up, so we'll be in good shape.
Okay, I'll probably be back at home by the time we do that, because there's going to be a little time difference, but we'll figure it out and get it all done. We'll do that by email. And thanks to Dan Zwicker for being able to be flexible and switch with you so that we can get you to South Africa. What's that conference all about? You're with who? Seaboard, is that right?
Yeah, Seaboard's having their International Grain Annual Conference, and there's going to be about 12 different speakers. It looks like, and it's going to be from, you know, people from the Ukraine, Russia, South America, a lot of German, Eastern Europe, and a couple Asian speakers as well. So it's going to be just their annual grain conference, and I think it'll be especially important, and one of the reasons I'm going this year is because it seems like that the global trade mindset has got to be put down pretty good in case we go down to another, you know, double dip recession, because we did lose a lot of global trade during that financial crisis because the lending tightened up, the trade credit tightened up, and bank financing for trade and goods and services tightened up quite a bit. So it'd be good to get a little bit better outlook, I think, from a global perspective this time around.
And speaking of the outside markets and the global perspective, the economics, I was a little scared, actually, to read the number from the gold on the air yesterday, simply because I couldn't believe that it was right until I confirmed it with Paul Cooley, because
yeah.
I saw it down $100, and I thought, no way, I've never seen one that far low, that in either direction. What'd you make of that?
Well, there's no limits in gold, and you can see two things here. You can see the power of the high-frequency trading. I think as more becomes known about the last 3 days of sessions, I think you'll find out that the high-frequency traders, they really amplify the trading mindset because of the speed and the amount of numbers that they push through the computers at one time. And so it was almost like a mini flash crash that we had in the gold in yesterday, and the day before even was down hard too. I think the biggest thing that I saw about the gold and also the bonds, they were both down extreme amounts yesterday especially, and I think that were the kind of the Chicken Little longs that were in the gold and in the bonds as safe havens, thinking that the sky was going to fall. I think those people were getting out yesterday with the idea that nothing had come out of Europe, no bank failures, no Lehman-style type correction, and kind of goes back to commodity week. I was thinking maybe the last 5-6 trading days we'd probably know if something really, really bad was going to happen. I would guess people those people jumped out because they were the ones that were the most recent longs, probably the most nervous longs about a calamity or a catastrophe, and they jumped out. And it's not a done deal yet as far as we're not out of the woods yet in Europe, but no news is good news as far as I'm concerned.
So yesterday's hard down was not actually a bad thing for the marketplace?
No, I think it was very healthy. I think tomorrow is going to be the big day, and a lot of people have been talking about this in Chicago. I've seen it all over the news wires today. So everybody in the corn pit that I've spoken to today has talked about Bernanke and what he says from Jackson Hole, because it was about a year ago today that he actually announced quantitative easing too. And I think the trade earlier this week, and part of the reason why those gold longs were getting out and those bond longs were getting out, was because the financials and the equities were rallying on the idea that tomorrow he was going to announce some type of QE3. I hope he doesn't, and if he doesn't, I think it may cause us to want to set back again in the equities, and that would be the low that we could put in there. I think I would feel a lot better if we'd make a low off of no news out of Bernanke, and then we'd have the bank index and the financial markets lead us back up. That would make me feel a lot better.
So let's talk about Commodity Week just a bit, because we had you and Dale Durkles in, both of which were, I don't want to say you were bearish by any means,
yeah,
but cautious may be the better word, and thinking that cash sales, once the combine started to move, if you were had $7 and above, if you had $13 and above cash, that those would be good sales. Are you still of that mind? Has anything changed in this week when you had you know, some people thinking, and Europe's maybe safer than we thought it was? Have things changed? Are you feeling more friendly to the marketplace or more satisfied with the marketplace for commodities?
No, I think I'm pretty much in the same boat, Todd. I think at this point, if we can rally and break out of the trading range in soybeans and have the soybeans lead the corn another leg higher, that's where I would look at the cash-related sales. But if we can't rally between now and the middle of September like we did back in that 1983 time period, I'm using that 83 model, if we can't do that, then if we break some of these near-term support levels, like from mid-August, early August, 20, 25 cents lower in corn, 30, 35 cents lower in beans, if we take those support levels out, I'm more of a put buyer because of the basis conversation we had on Commodity Week. I think this week has borne out the idea that we are seeing demand erosion. When I looked at the weekly export inspections and saw how slow they were, when I looked at today's weekly export sales and I saw that based upon the Reuters range of estimates, the wheat was below the estimates, beans were below, meal, soy oil, all below the lowest trade guess. Soy meal, four-week average, was down 38%. Wheat, four-week average, was down 27%. I think you look at that and the fact that a year ago today, lead month corn was at 404, and lead month beans were right at $10. We've rallied 80% in corn and almost 40% in beans. I think we have had that demand erosion, and it shows up. And I think that's where I really like to see that basis pop and that basis jump, and that's where I'd really like to position the producers, especially in the listening area. So on a rally, I like selling cash. On a break, I'd rather buy puts and keep my powder dry.
We'll get to see whether you're right or wrong when we talk to you, not next week, but the following week, dude.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, it's going to be, I think we're going to know a lot in the next 2 weeks as far as what that cash market's going to do, because right now the end users have been able to slap basis around and keep the demand low. But I have a sneaking suspicion in the next 2 weeks they're going to have to move and move pretty fast if those yields really aren't there like some of the pro farmer numbers are showing.
Okay, thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd. Take care.
Yep, that is Mike Zuzulo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. Joins us here on this Thursday afternoon instead of Dan Zwicker, because Mike's headed for South Africa tomorrow for a seaboard conference. We'll try to catch up with him during the week, although we'll be busy at Farm Progress Show, and at least give you an idea of what he learns while he's in South Africa and talking to seaboard, which tends to do a lot of export and import out of South America. So that should be interesting. On the phone line with us from, I don't know whether he's in Iowa or Minnesota, is Chip Flory with Pro Farmer. He's on the western leg of the Midwestern Pro Farmer Crop Tour. Chip, how are you today?
I'm doing real well. And Todd, I've been spending all day in Minnesota. We wrapped up the western leg portion of Iowa yesterday when we made our way from southwest Iowa up to the northwest corner.
Tell me what'd you find in Iowa and where'd you put those numbers?
Yeah, the southwest part of the state is a disaster. There's just so much storm damage down there. Storm damage is something that I usually don't even talk about. The only reason I like to identify it is so that when I get to the evening meetings, I can say, yep, we saw that storm damage in Calhoun County or something like that. This was different. My route ran right through a hailstorm that took out tens of thousands of acres. Then on top of that, we had wind that blew, we've got a lot of green snap and a lot of down corn there in the southwest district. When everything was said and done, our yield estimate in southwest Iowa was down 18% from last year. Conditions obviously improved as we got into the west central and the northwest part of the state. West central yields up about 2.5-3%, the northwest up 3-3.5%. So the question is then, did we find enough extra bushels in the west central and northwest crop district to offset the losses in the southwest? And the answer is no. The crop tour on the western edge of Iowa, our yield was down about 3-3.5%. And, you know, we were kind of counting on that spot a week ago or 10 days ago to make up for some of the losses that we were seeing over in Indiana and Illinois. And then that storm came along a week ago tonight. You know, think about it. A week ago, right now, that southwest corner of the state had yield potential of 180 bushels per acre. The next morning, tomorrow morning, that crop district down there is going to average about 140 bushels per acre. It's just, it was shocking how much damage was down there.
Wow, that is terribly shocking. And that will be a rough deal by the time you get to rolling your total estimate out tomorrow evening, I would think.
Absolutely.
For Pro Farmer and for the tour both, because they're two different estimates. Right.
Yeah, and when we, you know, that's part of the reason that it is a different estimate, because we have to put that perspective on there, just how much storm damage is out there. The northwest part of Iowa, for example, Todd, we had a yield that came in above a year ago, but there's a lot of wind damage up in the northwest part of the state, too, that we're going to have to account for when we put an estimate on Iowa.
All right. So we'll talk to you then tomorrow night for Commodity
Week. You bet.
All right. Anything else
you
to
bet.
Report?
And, yeah, Minnesota, just real quickly, terribly dry, unbelievably dry, drier than what I expected it to be.
Really?
Yeah. Yep. The corn crop, we are just north of Austin right now, and we've got a corn crop that is suffering and suffering big time. It put on yield, Todd, before the dry hit, but we're looking at a crop up here that's going to have a 2010-like finish, and we all know what that was like. It wasn't good.
Oh, one more question.
Yeah.
Bean counts for pods are probably okay, but they need a rain to fill out, right?
Yeah, you're exactly right. So the one thing that is consistent about this bean crop from South Dakota, Nebraska, western Iowa, into Minnesota, is we do not have any disease to talk about. We don't have any bug pressure to talk about. But the one thing that the bean crop almost everywhere could use is another rain to go ahead and finish with a strong yield. That is especially true in southern Minnesota. It needs a rain.
Thanks so much.
All right, Todd, thank you.
And we'll talk to you tomorrow at 4:30 for Commodity Week.
Sounds perfect.
Okay, that's Chip Flory. He's with Pro Farmer. He's the editor there and on the western leg of the Midwestern Crop Tour, and we'll talk with him during our Commodity Week program tomorrow. We record that at 4:30 in the afternoon. It will be up on our website by just about 6 o'clock tomorrow evening.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers. Support comes from Common Ground Food Co-op in Lincoln Square Mall. Community-owned since 1974, Common Ground is a full-service grocer featuring organic and local foods grown right here in Illinois. More information is on their website at www.commonground.coop. And from Prairie Fruits Farm, makers of farmstead and artisan cheeses and growers of organic tree fruits and berries. This summer, Prairie Fruits holds a cheese and gelato open house on Tuesdays from 3 to 7 p.m. Information on products and activities at prairiefruits.com and on Facebook at Prairie Fruits Farm and Creamery.
Hi, this is Illinois Public Media Director of Agricultural Programming, Dave Dickey. Coming up next, whether you say tomato or tomato, they are beloved by home gardeners and shoppers alike. In this edition of In My Backyard, Lisa Brotz says she has a passion for tomatoes, one that goes far beyond the typical red big boy.
It's tomato time. Luscious, luscious tomatoes. They're the centerpiece of so many gardens, of farmers markets. They're part of what I call the summer trifecta, sweet corn, peaches, and tomatoes. It seems for a lot of people, the entire local growing and eating season revolves around Solanum lycopersicum. My own tomato lust started this year, as it does every year, with the seed order in February. I began fantasizing about tomatoes when the catalog started arriving late last year, but didn't get serious about buying seeds until I was on vacation. I buy different varieties of seed every year. Usually I buy for name and color, which is tantamount to buying wine because it has a cool label or because you like the shape of the bottle. But when I rebuy seeds, it's always for flavor, followed by ease of growing. This season I started a lot of different heirloom varieties of tomato. Gold Medal, Paul Robeson. Yes, there's a tomato named Paul Robeson. Speckled Roman, Nebraska Wedding, Emerald Apple, German Lunchbox, Woodle, Ananas Noir. I set them up under their lights in early March. I watered them dutifully, and then I waited and bought other people's tomatoes. Locally grown hydroponic tomatoes first arrive at the local markets in May. Market patrons completely starve for lycopene and carotene, form lines, and fill their shopping bags when it's their turn. The hothouse tomatoes, which are grown in the warm climate of hoop houses and throughout the spring and early summer at local farms, come shortly thereafter. There's not much variety with hothouse or hydroponic tomatoes, though. You get them early, but their varieties grown specifically for earliness and uniformity, not for super deep flavor or wacky colors. Those are the field tomatoes, many of them heirloom varieties, and they are something else entirely. It wasn't that long ago at all that you could show a photo of a green striped tomato, or an orange one, or a so purple it's almost black one, and most people wouldn't even know what it was or believe that it was a tomato. Now heirloom tomatoes are hugely popular, and not just with home growers. A quick look at the displays of rapidly disappearing tomatoes at any farmer's market puts the lie to that. Tomatoes spanning the spectrum are now easily available at markets and, to a lesser degree, grocery stores. People snap them up for salads and burgers and pastas. This year, they were ready at the markets in quantity in mid-July. My own tomatoes suffered a little with the cool and wet spring, but once things dried out, they really got to move on. The window to build them a real structure, it's a vow my husband and I repeat every year, closed pretty rapidly, and once again we were left with out-of-control tomato plants by the 4th of July. 8 of them. I know 8 doesn't sound like a lot of tomato plants, and 8 small seedlings certainly don't look like much when you plant them out in late April or early May, but they can become a real problem for the home gardener in July and August if not properly contained. Our pathetic attempts to tie them to stakes were failures, their weight pulling the stakes out of the ground. As I write, there's a lot of fruit scattered in the tomato bed. Some fallen victim to an as-yet unidentified pest. Others clearly fallen victim to some extremely delighted squirrels. But there's still loads of fruit on the plants themselves, however haphazardly they may be growing. That's one of my favorite things about tomatoes. They can be growing in some pretty terrible conditions, yet they're still productive and all those colors make your garden look good, especially when everything else in the garden is falling apart, as things so often do after a hot and dry summer where weeds do not get pulled and watering doesn't happen every day. Tomatoes might slow down, but unless you really try hard to kill them or they get some terrible disease, they keep producing right up until the first frost. But they can also punish you with plenty. I mentioned earlier I have 8 tomato plants this year. This is down from an all-time high a few years ago of 22. I know, I had a serious tomato problem. I grew 3 different kinds of cherry tomatoes for my kids to pull off the plant neat. I grew tomatoes that were good for canning, and I grew tomatoes to trade with friends and neighbors. The combination of underestimating the plant's productivity plus overestimating the amount of time available for preserving, not to mention my friends and family's ability to eat that many tomatoes, was deadly. But even though I still can't keep up, I'm just not sure 8 plants is enough. Not when Black from Tula, Orange Icicle, Isis Candy and their friends are just begging to be grown. This is Lisa Braltz for In My Backyard.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Thursday afternoon. Matt Bennett is here from TGM to take a look at the cash grain market. Matt, thank you so much for being with us. I know you're traveling this afternoon, but I'd like to start actually with your bids for the day if you happen to have them in front of you.
Yeah, a bid on corn, cash 752, and on fall corn, it would be 727.
You expect the base
to go on. What's that now?
No, go on, and the rest of your bids, I'm sorry.
Yeah, and then on beans, we'd be looking at 1378 and 1358 for fall. So, yeah.
And you expect cash basis to tighten up as we head into fall or not?
Well, it's going to be interesting. A lot of it's going to depend on where you're at, I suppose. You know, there's areas where they feel like they could get awfully tight, but then also, you know, we see some harvest starting, so... Mm-hmm. You know, I think once combines really get to rowing, it'll definitely ease off just a hair.
Thank you so much.
Yep, thank you, Todd.
Okay, so we're going to continue on just a bit as we let go of some of our commercial radio station affiliates, but I do want to continue to talk with you. When you look in your fields, are you feeling that the Pro Farmer Crop Tour is reflective of what you've got there? They're saying that it's just not there this year. Oop. Matt must just let go of me. That's all right. We don't have to worry about that too much. I talked to him ahead of time, and I guess he didn't understand what I had to say to him. But we'll continue on with our program. Remember, you can always visit us online if you'd like at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find everything from our opening market report, pre-opening market report, and closing market report to Commodity Week. And we also have a midday update with Sue Martin. That happens at 12:55. all up on the website not long after it airs on our radio station. Next week, this program, the Closing Market Report, should come to you live from the Farm Progress Show site. We will do shows in the University of Illinois tent at 10:30. Orion Samuelson actually will host that hour. And then at 2 o'clock for the Closing Market Report. And at 3 o'clock, more than 20 of our analysts will be on site at the University of Illinois tent next week for the Farm Progress Show, 7 or 8 of them each day. Be sure to visit our website. They're on the calendar if you want to see specifically who's on site with us each day of that week. We do invite you to come by and visit us again. That's at the Farm Progress Show on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday of next week.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of 5 new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Thursday afternoon. Pete Labbitt is busy today with the storms on the East Coast. In his stead, Mike Tenora is joining us from his Chicago office of T-Storm. Thanks, Mike, for filling in for Pete today. What do you see in the Midwest for rainfall? Producers still surely would like to get one.
Well, I don't have the best of news, unfortunately, because what we have taking place right now is a large area of upper-level high pressure, which is developing off to our west. And what that will end up doing over the next week or so is it actually expands a little bit, especially next week. So when you combine that with high pressure that will be induced by Hurricane Irene over the next 3 to 4 days across the Midwest, you essentially end up with almost no chances for rain in the heart of the Corn Belt, which includes much of Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, and even points to the south over the next week, possibly even into next weekend. We really don't see a good chance for rain in these states anytime soon. Now, if we're going to be wrong, we have a reason we could figure that out. And the reason would be there's some storms that will fire up this weekend and early next week out in the plains. So North Dakota, South Dakota, Nebraska, possibly northern Kansas. These areas have been unseasonably wet over the last 3 months, so for them to get more storms would not be a big surprise, but the big surprise would be for those storms to move eastward because we're just being dominated by these areas of high pressure, either at the surface or at the upper levels, and either one of them is not very conducive to rain. Well, next week won't be a bad week at all, at least in the beginning of the week as far as temperatures go. It'll be fairly typical for this time of the year, say high temperatures around 80 to 84, lows in the 60s, so and not real muggy either, so not, you know, a terrible forecast in that regard. As the week progresses, it will turn warmer, and we would not be at all surprised to see 90s return to a big chunk of Illinois by the time we head into, say, Thursday and Friday of next week. So turning warmer as the week progresses, but in the beginning of the week, it looks near average, so not too bad, and humidity levels will be fairly low as well.
Turn your attention to the southern parts of the United States. Do we have any concerns with their potential to get into the field and put a decent winter wheat crop in the ground?
Well, we have real concern from southern Kansas and southward through Oklahoma and Texas. To the north of there, no concerns at all. It's actually been much wetter than usual since the end of May. But if you just take a look at Texas, Oklahoma, and southern Kansas over the last 90 days, 20% of the projected winter wheat crop area has received less than half its average rainfall. And that's a big number when you think about it over a 90-day period. That's a big number even over a 14-day period or a 30-day period. So we have real concern that if they don't start to see some big rains, it's going to be difficult to plant. And even if you do plant, you won't establish in the best of conditions. So we have concern for that portion of the hard red winter wheat belt. Again, that includes 20% of projected production, according to our calculations. But if you head north, everything looks pretty good from the northern third of Kansas on north, where actually drier weather would probably be a good deal because most of those states have been unseasonably wet. So this is what happens when you have a drought develop. The area that gets hit hard, which is Texas and Oklahoma. And then you go further to the north, and that's where all the storms are firing up time and time again during the summer along the northern edge of that heat wave. That's why they've been wanted.
Mike, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Mike Tenora is with T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois. That wraps up this edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason.